It talked about the fact that the message doesn't have any value unless it makes an impact. Too many people think just by sharing really important information, that alone should be incredibly effective in them selling somebody on either their company, their product, or a job, or their point of view if it's in a life relationship. Unless it makes an impact, and then it's got to be a positive and profound impact, it doesn't have any value. So you can't just dump information, authoritative or cocky. You got to basically make sure it is disseminated in a progressive manner where they basically take ownership and they accept it and they respect it and they evaluate it and they move to your point of view, or it'll have no impact. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
People have to recognize your advice as a solution to a problem they feel emotionally as well as rationally. It doesn't matter if you, how many times have you ever seen a great business proposition or a great sales proposition or a great concept be presented and not get accepted, even though there was no logical reason it was turned down? Everything about it was more logical, more economically sound, more structurally sound, but you failed to compel people on the emotional level of feeling, how they're going to feel, why they're going to feel it. You failed to incorporate that other tier of decision-making weight that impacts and balances or throws either the other way or helps bring to closure selling decisions in people's minds.
For those of us who maybe have been thinking just on one tier, can you amplify, paint a little bigger picture of the emotional impact that others fear?
Well, yeah, let's just say that I just made a great presentation on a dollar and cents basis and you're sort of not really excited.
Okay.
If I say, look, Marty, I have to share this with you. There's an arguable financial case for it, but that's not really the reason I would imagine and I would hope you'd want to do it. I just can't see why you'd want to work 12 hours a day when I can see you only having to work 7, and you could put those other 5 hours to so much more productive use. You could connect more with your family. You could pursue your hobbies. You could get in touch with your children. You could play tennis. You know, and you know that you'd have the certainty that you don't know now of having a cash flow, and you know you'd have security for the rest of your life, and you know you were in control, and you know you made the kind of a strategic decision that would protect you and guarantee your financial prosperity for or how long. You'd know that in a year or two, if you wanted to take a 3 or 4 month sabbatical and take your wife around the world or go rent a beach house in Florida or Hawaii, or go by yourself somewhere on a sail around the world, you'd be able to do that. You see what I'm saying, Mike?
Yeah, so your strategy there is, if I'm not responding, or in addition to my responding to just the monetary, you would go searching in my life for some other aspect.
It's not an if, it's I would concurrently make that a part of my strategy, but my strategy would be ethically predicated on me trying to empathically serve you as best I can, and I realize that you don't have a picture of what anything looks like, including the emotional relief or the emotional liberation it would give you, and I want you to make sure that you're evaluating any proposition I advise you and bring to you on all the gradients and all the criteria points important, not just the black and white tangible ones.
All right, I see, I understand.
Should I continue?
Yes.
This is interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You have to provide customers with the reassurance and the motivation to use that solution. Just because I provide you with a solution doesn't mean you're going to take it. I've got to give you the motivation and the reassurance. They're going to say, Marty, and the best part about it is by taking this action, you immediately save the 5 hours a day, but you also save the $5,000 a month. There's the downside is not. I mean, there's no negative in the transaction. to get started, it's so easy because all you have to do basically is collect these 12 points of information, and if it's too much trouble, I can help you do it for you, or I can easily direct your people. I know that you probably want to be like Bruce, my friend, who already did it, who now is spending 4 hours a day that he used to spend watching and managing his people and overseeing his company and double-checking him. Now he's out on the golf courses learning golf. He basically tells me he gets to spend a half hour every night in his garden. He gets to walk the dog. He gets to run the hour that he missed. And he tells me that he actually is home for dinner every night, and it's just wonderful. I would imagine, I don't know if those are the hobbies or the interests or how you'll use your 4 hours or how you'll use your extra $200,000 every 3 years, but I want you to have that, and I think you want it, don't you?
Let me ask you just to explain a little more. My prospect, my family member that I'm in this communication process with, what's going on with them that I need to reassure them and motivate them? Where are they at?
They haven't clearly recognized that they have the power and they deserve more out of life. I'll make a parenthetical statement now, which may explain and define the reasons why most people don't, but you have to help them if you adopt this preeminent strategy. And I think it's very powerful. But I think it goes on this concept of how to optimize your life and your business by learning how to get everything you can out of all you've got, and that you deserve that. And you deserve that. And anything less is a disservice to yourself and everyone you impact. But I think before we go on, I should establish my philosophy behind its whole essence, at least from my vantage point, and it's this. I could never understand, Marty, this fact about most people I met, I worked with, I taught, or I studied. It's very simple. We were all put on this earth, and we had numerous available opportunities at our beck and call, at our disposal, available to us. We had the chance to interact with our loved ones, to develop our minds, our bodies, to create and render enormous value, benefit in our jobs, our careers, to start, build businesses and make them really successful. We had the chance to earn a profit, quite a handsome profit. We had the chance to touch people's lives at a level and a dimension only we limited. And I believe, and I think a lot of people don't realize they have this right and this obligation to themselves and to help others. When you have the chance to do so many enjoyable, enriching, impactful, and rewarding things, why would you not do them to the maximum level possible? Why would you partially live any portion of your life, Marty? Any portion of your job, any portion of your relationship, any portion of your business? To me, at least, there's no joy in a life partially lived, but your job has got to be to help people realize that for themselves and not do it in a sermonizing way, but do it in an advisory way where they see that they owe it to themselves. And you as a company owner, a business owner, a professional, you owe it to your customers to help them get so much more out of everything they do. So I believe the purpose of this program, The Wizard's Edge, is to teach people and touch people, irrespective of whether they're an employee, a mother, a father, a husband, a child, a parent, business owner, entrepreneur, professional, the philosophy of optimization. And I think your job as a listener is to help people see that they owe themselves so much more, but they've never allowed, recognized, or acknowledged that it's even possible. Does that more answer it, Marty?
Yes, and so just as listeners to The Wizard's Edge, you're reassuring and motivating us to go ahead and take the next step.
I'm doing the very same thing. Exactly. I'm doing it as an illustrative example, the very same thing. And you got to realize two things. You owe it to your customers and prospects because they've never allowed themselves to even recognize what's possible and what they deserve and what result they could get if they did it. If they did it a better way. You owe it to your employees to show them what's possible that they could give and get out of their job. You owe it to your family members. You owe it to your loved ones. You owe it to everybody you impact. It's a wonderful process when you change the orientation strategy of the way you conduct your life.
All right. I'm reassured. I'm motivated.
But it's powerful, don't you think?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going back to this concept of providing customers and prospects with reassurance and motivation to use the solution. Remember, you were providing them with a solution, and they have to recognize that advice emotionally as well as rationally.
Okay.
The process of providing reassurance and motivation to use a solution can either be a result or a good or better feeling about what they are already doing. Remember, I said a lot of people deal only on a tangible dollar and cents numbers type of a basis, and they can't understand why people don't buy from them when they've got a black and white case that it's absolutely 100% better off for them.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's because they haven't dealt with the better feelings people are going to get by doing something better that they're already doing, not as effectively or not as successfully or not as appropriately.
Okay.
People are basically want to feel good about themselves and the way they are conducting themselves. They want to feel good about the decisions and the actions they take and make. But they will do all kinds of things to curtail and avoid and procrastinate making gains because they don't want to feel foolish. If you talk about why people don't buy automobiles, it has nothing to do, by and large, with the price or the style or the options. They don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to look foolish. They don't want to go home and have somebody say, "What? You paid $38,000? I could have bought that car for you for $29,000. Or what? You got 8.7% interest? I could have gotten you 6.4. Or what? You bought the warranty package for a $2,000? If people will avoid making decisions because they don't want to feel foolish. You also always have to look at your purpose in what you do and the purpose of why they should be doing something and make sure your purpose is to help them develop a better understanding of what their purpose should be and that your purpose is always to put their best interest, always to put their well-being, always to put their benefit ahead of yours. But part of the process of doing that is helping them understand what is possible, what they could be achieving, what they are entitled to, how much bigger and better or greater result for the effort, or how much less effort they really have to expend. Does that make sense?
Everything you say makes sense.
It's very powerful. Ask yourself this question. This is what these people do in every transaction and every communication they ever expend. If I were on the receiving end, why would I want this or would I? Why would I want to take advantage? What's in it for them or for me, the customer? Too often we don't put enough in it for them, and we're confused and we're bewildered about why they don't buy something from us. When these people put together a selling communication, and again, that can mean a sales presentation, it can mean a sales call, a telephone call, a direct mail letter, an advertisement, a television commercial, a booth at a trade show. They always ask themselves, after they identify and formulate what they think their strategy and their communication process and the composition of it's going to be, they say, "So what?" As if the customer got it. So what? What's in it for the customer? My promotion has to answer a question that's already on the customer's mind. It has to provide a solution or a result that is big enough and tangible enough and desirable enough that it will compel them to want to take action. So they always ask themselves, so what are we going to do for the customer? As if the customer is saying, so what are you going to do for me? What's in it for me? So they always try to tell me, the customer, why and how the process will better my life, will improve my circumstances, will produce a greater result that I should desire and that I am entitled to and that is within my reach and is easier to access than the alternative that I've been satisfied with. This is very critical. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10 words that will change anybody's life forever if they write them down, if they utter them every day in the morning, in the noon, and at night, and if they live them. Are you ready?
I have my pen ready.
Most people fall in love with their own company or their product or their service instead of falling in love with their prospect. Your whole business success, your whole passion, your whole connectivity, your whole positioning, the way you are seen, embraced, and respected will change massively when you conceive of your business as interacting and enhancing people or other companies' lives and situations. Most people think, when they're trying to sell a product or service, most companies think, what do I have to say to get people to buy? This company always believe what they should say is, what do I have to give? What value do I have to create? What benefit do I have to render? Different take, isn't it, Marty?
Well, it is, and it seems to me not only ultimately does it enrich the other person, is that my life is impacted.
It gives purpose and fulfillment to you. It makes it about 10 times more enjoyable to be in the process. The same thing about, again, keep in mind, I'm talking about it in the context that I deal with the most, which is how a business owner or a professional can gain very much greater preeminent success, profit, sales, repeat business from customers. However, it is so universal that it applies to how an employee can get more connectivity with their employer, how an employer can get more connectivity with an employee, how a person can get more connectivity and impact and success with a loved one, with a friend, with a neighbor, with a child. It's pretty darn powerful.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay. Focus of your concern, your state, your attitude when dealing with the other side, whatever the other side is, a customer, an employee, employer, husband, wife, should always be the non-verbalized communication of the fact that you matter. Your well-being is genuinely and truly and constantly important to me. And you should live that. The worst thing for somebody, a customer prospect, to do is feel out of control, confused, unstructured. Your job, your challenge is to give them control, give them clarity, give them structure so they have empowerment. When you do that, you give them power, and power is the confidence. Remember I talked about the clarity and all the way through the power? That's how, and it ends up with trust. People who give people the answers, people who give people illumination, people who give people direction normally are respected because they empower you. Hopefully you're getting excited listening to this yourself, Marty, because I'm empowering you.
I was just thinking as people start to apply this, and you must know this maybe better than anyone else on the planet, not everyone responds positively to this. There's impediments, the frustration of trying to apply this until it becomes a habit. How do you keep from falling off?
You've got to really live. You've got to believe your purpose is to contribute greater value, that you're here and you're in business not to try to take somebody's money, but to try to give somebody a greater outcome for whatever they're doing, a greater result, a greater benefit, a greater yield. And once you start believing that ardently and genuinely in the craw of your heart, it'll transform the way you do things, and it becomes natural. It'll transform the way you connect with people. It'll transform the way you communicate with people. It'll transform the way you transact business with people, and quickly, surprisingly quickly, the vast majority of people will come around. You have to allow yourself to believe it. If you're feigning it, if it's theatrical, it will not work. And you've got to basically extend yourself beyond your own self-consumption. You've got to subordinate totally your own self-interest and focus your life on others. Anybody who's ever really gotten in, have you ever gotten into, I don't know if you, are you married and have children, Marty?
Yeah, yes.
Are you close to your children?
I would say yes.
Have you ever really gotten involved in an event where the children were so preeminent in your focus that your interest was subordinate? You didn't care about time, you didn't care about cost, you didn't care. You're just so involved in the process, bringing such joy or knowing that was bringing them intellectual expansion or whatever it was, and that you just were so caught up in it that you totally subordinated your own self and it felt so good.
Yeah.
That's the whole process. It feels so good. Most people in business today they don't feel good about it. They're not happy. They're queasy. They're unfulfilled. They have no passion. They have no purpose. They have no connection. They're struggling to try to find passion again, to try to get purpose, to try to fall in love with the business. You'll never fall in love with the business until you first fall in love with the client and the prospect and the customer. So your job has got to be to see yourself as an agent of change, a creator of value, a value contributor to your customers, prospects, employees, family members. It's a great vision. It gives you purpose. It gives you purpose. When you have purpose, you can move with conviction. You're on a crusade, and you'll achieve a level and a depth and a constancy of accomplishment and impact you never dreamed possible. Most customers don't want to see things as a process. They'd rather see things as a project with a beginning and an end. If in your communications with them, whether they be live, on phone, in person, by letter or ad, you take the position, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go. It's not going to take a long time. Here's our strategy. We're going to start here. We're going to end up getting you to here. It's going to be an easy process. It'll take blank transactions or blank days or blank minutes, and you'll do this and this, and each thing you do will get you closer until you'll finally have it all down, and you'll finally have. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Maybe it's an activity with a limited time span.
Yes, but you got to take them to the understanding it's not infinite, it's not dreary, it's not an endless tunnel. There is an end. There is closure. When you get there, it's wondrous. It's blessed. It's so much better than you are now. And getting there is easy, relatively speaking. It's only going to take this amount of time or this amount of steps or this amount of activities, and I'll do it all for you, and none of which are unpleasant, none of which are going to be difficult, and they're always going to be more, and at each step of the way, you're going to be better off than you were before you started.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And like if I were to verbalize it, it'd be like saying, look, Marty, do this with me. Decide you don't want to be average anymore, because most people don't want to be average. And when you realize and your wish and hope for them is that they don't content themselves with an average result, with average yield, with average benefit, with average payoff for the effort or the investment or the purchase, they'll relate to you. As soon as you respect them and you empathize them and tell them they don't have to be average, they are hooked on you forever if it's genuine. People need solutions, not just strategies. They need someone to advocate and address their well-being in a conclusive way that brings them to an end result that they can see and they can believe and they can emotionally and rationally understand and accept. People always pursue their well-being in a logical, rational way first, but their decisions are liberated on emotionally basis. So you got to deal with those two separate gradients all the time. The way that I think these people that I'm sharing their concepts and their strategy with you built their business is by always asking their customers, Marty, isn't there a better way to accomplish this? Isn't there a faster and easier, more profitable, more enjoyable, a more predictable, a more ongoing way to get this done? I mean, that's a pretty interesting question to ask, isn't it?
It's profoundly interesting.
But not trying to say, but not confrontationally. They're always putting questions and advice in your mind in a way that you take ownership. This person that I interviewed got his start running one of the most successful management consulting firms on the East Coast. And he shared with me a real interesting insight. He said the feeling in most consulting circles is that to sell people, you have to bedazzle them with rhetoric. He felt the quite opposite is actually the case. Whenever he was running the consulting operation, they were extraordinarily successful. He always wanted to have ideas that made sense to people and left people better off than when they started. He felt that most people in selling focus on tangible results, and yet most of the great rewards in life are not tangible. Think in your own life, Marty, or in the life of anybody listening to this tape. The greatest day in your life, the greatest point, the greatest achievement, the greatest feeling you ever had probably occurred on some basis that was not money denominated. Maybe it's when your first child was born. Maybe it's when you basically got your first you got your college degree. Maybe it's when you won the championship. Maybe it's when you took some great trip. Maybe it's when you learned how to ski for the first time. Maybe it's when you witnessed the birth of your child. Maybe it's when your wife or husband said yes, they'd marry you. Maybe it's when your child said their first word or took their first step or threw their first baseball. But it's certainly very rarely tangible. It's usually very emotional and intangible.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to hear you have you say just another sentence about the importance of that in our lives.
Well, the importance is that most people who are trying to sell or persuade other people to embrace their point of view are trying to do it on tangible basis. It's like, I want you to see my point. But that's not how people really make decisions. That's not what compels people. People are compelled on intangible or emotional levels.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. I would translate what you're saying. People are complex creatures. They're not just simple propositional machines.
True, but they make their decisions more on emotional basis because the emotional feelings, the satisfaction, the joy, the exhilaration, the confidence, the certainty, the feeling of having your heart joyous is a basis upon which more people decide than not, but few people use those issues to incorporate into their efforts to try to compel them to seize whatever it is they're offering.
Okay, and so as we're thinking about, say, the person thinking about starting a business or the part-time profit center, it's crucial, number one, that these people are looking for this in their own lives, and number two, as they think about potential customers.
Well, they can use this in all gradients. When they're trying to sell a concept to somebody else, maybe to bring to do it with them, to joint venture with them, when they're trying to build customers, when they're trying to acquire the rights to products or services, when they're trying to negotiate with people for terms, for credit, when anything they're doing, when they're trying to be, any time you're trying to persuade or influence someone to see your point of view, you've got to make sure that you incorporate the emotional side.
Okay, Jay, by my count here, I would guess you're about halfway through the model of the company.
I've got 20 pages of notes that I'm reading from, and I basically am on page 9, Marty.
All right, I tell you what, let's stop right where we are here with the model of the company and shift gears for the moments we have left. You've worked with thousands and thousands of clients. I know a while you were consulting by telephone and have some examples of from your discussions why some people are more successful than others.
Well, what I've done is this. I'm committed to preserving the body, not only of my work, but of my observations for posterity, so to speak. So what I do is continually I record and summarize my overviews and my observations of reasons why people don't achieve the levels of success they want, or conversely, what I observe and discover that differentiates a man or a woman or a business owner or a professional who is many times more successful than somebody else who may work the same amount of hours or the same amount of seemingly emotional investment, but doesn't get anywhere close to the same outcome. And I have a growing file of these observations, and I have lots of different lessons, factors, elements, whatever you want to call it. I'd be glad to share some of them.
Yeah, please do, because I just assume someone else, as long as they've made the mistake, I'd like to have them pay the tuition and I get the lesson.
Well, okay, not necessarily in any order. I'll just sort of pick some out here, and I'll refer to my notes a little bit so I make sure that I embellish them right. One of the biggest things a lot of people don't understand is what I'll call creative emulation. It's a pretty important subject. Creative emulation, by the way, is not to be confused with outright plagiarism. Creative emulation, as I would define it, Marty, is probably the highly leveraged art of studying and observing all sorts of effective and successful marketing, business, selling, promotional, positioning techniques, concepts, and approaches that companies outside, totally outside your marketing sphere are using, and inventively adapting applications, implications, importations, interpretations, and variations of those concepts to fresh new approaches in your business. Let me give you a few examples, maybe of some innovative ones from the past that will help you understand better. A few years ago, I was reading the National Enquirer, something, by the way, I suggest a lot of other people read, even though they think it's hokey. And I saw a silly ad offering emeralds for merely $3 as part of a, quote, purported test they were doing. At first glance, I poo-pooed this concept as stupid. But when the ads kept repeating themselves over and over again, and when these and all kinds of other renditions, like complete fishing set for $4, nice set for $5, began appearing in all kinds of other consumer magazines, I finally took heed and realized that this marketing test approach and its corresponding advertising rationale had enormous lateral application to all kinds of marketing areas I was involved in. So I started creatively emulating the marketing test concept, and I discovered there were all kinds of applications. I applied it to newsletters and software and all kinds of service companies, and we applied it to selling tape courses and written courses, and we adapted it to seminar offers and selling transcripts and to art and to pest control services. And it worked like a charm. Combined, I think I generated over $10 million for my own account, and I think something like $50 million for a couple of clients just by emulating what somebody else had done.
In the National Enquirer.
Yes. That's just one example. Here's a couple other. A newsletter publisher friend of mine was sitting in bed reading the Wall Street Journal about 5 years ago and read about a little restaurant in Pennsylvania that allowed customers to pay whatever price they felt their meal was worth. The restaurant was doing a landslide business, Marty. So my newsletter friend tried a name-your-own-price approach for renewals of his newsletter. He more than doubled the number of people renewing, ended up realizing, on average, many, many, many hundreds of dollars more than he would have for 1,000 people, just because they averaged being very fair and they gave him a price they thought the newsletter was worth, which was actually more than he was going to renew it for. I could go on and on, but it's a pretty interesting concept. Okay, if you don't see it in its entirety, let me restate it here. Number one, it's perfectly acceptable to emulate someone else's concept, particularly when you see tangible evidence that it is very successfully working in some other application. Number two, some of the most successful and profitable marketing breakthroughs, Marty, I have ever seen or been involved in were adaptations of concepts other people had developed for totally foreign applications in totally different businesses and industries. If the people listening to this tape can cultivate an inquisitive, curious, discovery-based, investigative attitude and mind and pursue all sorts of unrelated avenues in search of concept inspiration, if they can learn this concept I alluded to earlier of extrapolating, of adaptation, interpretation, and importation of ideas and concepts over to their business, your chances of coming across something usable and profitable through emulating is very, very high.
Oh, okay, can you give me some specifics, dimensionalize emulation? I'm real tempted. I don't know if you want to talk about the emerald ads.
Well, yeah, it was very simple. It's like I saw these silly ads that said emeralds, $3 as part of a marketing test to get new customers. And I thought it was hokey, but then I came up with an ad that said $200 newsletters for $19 as part of a test. And it basically said so many people are offering you financial newsletters and people are being asked to spend $200 and they're not told what the information is going to entail. If they spend the money and it doesn't work, maybe they get a money-back provision. But by that time, they'll already have wasted a lot of their money, tens, twenties, hundreds of thousands of dollars, thousands of dollars on investments that may not be good.
Okay.
We don't want you to do that. We found newsletters that were absolutely impeccable in the quality of their investment, economic, and financial advice. We offered people in the ads the chance to sample or test the newsletter's veracity and accuracy on paper for $19. As we told them, we're going to make very little money on it, just barely cover the cost of the ad. But we know if you paper trade the investments we recommend, you can't help over the year to make a profit on paper. If you do, it will validate before you've ever risked any money the prudence, the quality, the predictability of the recommendations and the advice of these letters, and you should not mind at any price a year from now renewing, because you'll be renewing with a fraction of the paper profits you made.
Can I see if you can put something together here?
Yeah.
The part of the country I live in is known for the particular company merchandises furniture, massive offerings of furniture and home appliances. in essence, a very simple environment, no ambiance at all, but it's very cheap and it's everything you want is there. How could I apply the same concept of merchandising in another area?
Well, you could apply it to a specific lead item. You could say $500 decorator lamp, $69 as part of a test. We believe if you've never owned a really quality piece of furniture in your house, or if you've never allowed yourself to indulge, or if you've never seen the difference a quality decorator lamp could make in a room, you owe it to yourself. And we know a lot of people are put off because they can't abide or think of why any piece of accessory could be worth $500. We think the only way you'll ever appreciate it is if you have it in your home, illuminating, standing as an art form, getting the attention, getting acknowledged, getting praise from people, seeing how much it brings life and beauty to your home. So we were delighted to offer you a lamp we ordinarily would price at $500 for just $69 and not even ask you to consider the purchase binding and complete until you've had it in your home as a decorator item, as an instrument of illumination for 45 days. If it's everything we think it is, we know you'll start becoming much more respectful and desirous of quality furniture, and there's a higher than not probability you'll come back, and that's where we intend to make our nominal but continuous profit. We aren't expecting to make any money on this lamp. Frankly, we're selling it for less than or about what we pay for it wholesale, and having to buy 500 in order to do that. But we think the chance to get that lamp into your home and on your mantle or on your desk or on your coffee table is so important that it's our way of introducing you to the worth of... Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. How about two more ideas from past history, then we're out of time.
Okay. Well, one is the reason why one person's albatross can easily be another person's golden opportunity. I have cultivated through observation and experience the attitude that obstacles and problems are always opportunities. Okay, it's a perspective, that the ability to perceive a situation, an asset, a distress, or problem is an opportunity, and you got to find the opportunity and pay dirt and then profitably act. For those listening who'll say that all I'm talking about is the difference between optimism and pessimism and seeing the glass half full or half empty, let me clarify my thoughts for a minute. By cultivating a perspective of enlightened opportunism, or opportunistic realism, as I like to call it, Marty, you can start viewing every marketing opportunity, every business situation you come in contact with as a chance to profit handsomely from someone else's oversight. And if morality is of key importance to you, take comfort in the delightful fact that every time you identify a problem or an obstacle that you or someone else is faced with and you find a solution that's profitable for it, you'll actually be doing a very moral and lucrative service to the person or business who overlooked that opportunity in the first place, since in order for you to capitalize or exploit the opportunity, you must first give some form of immediate future fixed or variable compensation so people are being taken out of the problem. Does that make sense?
Makes sense, yes.
And whatever consideration you offer them is obviously more than the possessor of that problem or obstacle had on their own, or they wouldn't accept it. So if I've overcome your moral problems with taking advantages of turning problems into opportunities, yours or otherwise, let me now provide you with an operating philosophy that I use, some rules of thumb and some actual case examples from my own past. First, here in a nutshell, is my basic operating philosophy when it comes, Marty, to looking at dormant or unexploited assets. I look probingly at virtually everything I come in contact with, seeking constantly to determine what ways, if any, I can modify or commandeer any facet of someone else's business operation over to my own ethical advantage. I read newspapers and magazines cover to cover, talk to people, have a massive network of contacts and well-positioned operatives looking at all kinds of situations, doing reconnaissance, telling when somebody has a problem, is in trouble, has a reversal, gets in a cash flow bind, business is down. Next, I see if there are any products or services I can acquire the rights or the usage to with a fresh new application or twist or a different combination or put them together in different packaging combinations than anyone else saw. Then I look at the ad, I see how I can advertise them or how I can promote them or how I can communicate them. Then I look at that with an eye towards what and how many customers and prospect names I might be able to generate and what other products or services I could then sell once I identified that market. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
And there's always an opportunity if you look at something differently. A great case in point, all these horrible numbers of companies who went bankrupt in the last few years because they were what they called leverage buyouts, you know what that is?
You're right.
People thought they were bankrupt. The truth of the matter, there was great operating businesses within all those bankruptcies. Unfortunately, those businesses just couldn't generate enough profit that they could service the unreasonable amount of debt that their acquirers took on.
Mm-hmm.
When those businesses were paired off and put in different applications, they thrived. So you got to look at every kind of obstacle normally as an opportunity. You got to start learning how to ask yourself, where is the opportunity in this? Who could profit from this? Who would benefit from this? What else could be done with this? Who else might utilize or benefit from this? Who else would have more to gain by me working through this? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
Do we have time to go on or no?
All right. No, we're just about out of time.
Well, what we'll do is next, or at one of the next calls, we'll finish the other 20 or so points on the preeminence strategy,
okay,
or the strategy of preeminence, and I'll do at least 10 or 15 more on this, okay?
All right. J. Abraham the Wizard with the Wizard's Edge. Thanks for listening. This is Marty Stacey. Goodbye for now.